So tonight's topic is freedom in the midst of pain. It's a topic that's prone to a lot of confusion. I get a lot of questions over the years about what seems pretty obvious. Why should I do this when you say I should not do something that sounds a whole lot like that? So I'm going to try to pick a path through the things that can be misunderstood with this topic. And please follow me and we'll just see how we do. For one thing, teachers say that you should turn away from the thoughts that cause dukkha or suffering, mental suffering. And turn your attention to positive thoughts, like metta. And one of the questions I get a lot is, isn't that just suppressing your feelings? But then teachers say, be fully present with your experience. So which should you do? And the short answer is both. The real answer is long. For starters, let's distinguish between thoughts and feelings. I ask people, mostly beginners, how do you feel about that? And I get a story. Well, I feel like somebody blah, blah, blah. And not how the body is feeling. Thoughts definitely have the power to cause physical responses that will feel pleasant or unpleasant or somewhere in between. And so do immediate, raw experiences, also known as reality. And we can't control reality. And we should not suppress the feelings that it causes. With wisdom, our emotional responses should be allowed to run their course. Notice I said with wisdom. Our emotions are influenced not just by the event that's happened, but also by our pre-existing mind states. Things that we've had maybe for a long time, like attitudes or basic assumptions or previous traumas. A lot of stuff that in the four foundations of mindfulness is mindfulness of mind. What's in the background? What's influencing our present response to our experience? Now, for example, when Pauletta was dying, my emotional responses were magnified or in some cases even distorted because I was and still am grieving my sister's death. So that loss just landed on top of a lot of the pain of other losses. And then, talk about bad timing, Carla's diagnosis with breast cancer was right before Pauletta's memorial. And she just wasn't up to going. And I wasn't up to leaving her, for obvious reasons. So I would have liked to have been in both places at the same time, but I just had to deal with what was in front of me the best I could. And this is something that we face over and over. We can't do this perfectly. We just have to show up and do the best we can. So when we have really strong feelings, they need to be processed with care. And another good word for wisdom is discernment, so that we can recognize those mind states, those pre-existing mind states, in a healing way, and know that they are contributing to our current distress. So it's like, oh yes, I have grief from the past. It's influencing my responses. I'm a little crazy. So I need to be very discerning about the wisdom of how I take care of myself and how I respond to other people. Now, this processing of emotion often involves mental activities that we think of as thinking. But in this work, they're not generating dukkha. And they're part of wisdom to just recognize this is that, this is something else. This is the current emotion, this is a past emotion or attitude. Now, feelings that are provoked by thoughts are in a different category to those that are responding to what's here and now. If thoughts are wholesome, positive, recognizing our connection to all beings, then those thoughts are a good refuge, and we can go to them when we're in the midst of suffering. Other thoughts are negative, and they isolate us from other beings. They make us feel that we're separate. So that's when teachers say, redirect those thoughts away from what causes dukkha and onto those wholesome thoughts that make us feel love and the support of being connected to others. Okay, this is complex. You know, it's not simple. And there aren't clear-cut lines between the categories or the time frames. Because when we're having emotion, it feels very immediate. It doesn't come with a sign around its neck saying, I'm coming from your past. I'm here to haunt you and trip you up. Basically, what it is something that has just needed processing. It's needed healing, possibly for a long time. You know, by the time we reach our teens, we have a huge store of unprocessed feelings and mind states. And very few people at those early ages are really equipped to bring mindfulness and open-hearted attention that they deserve. So a lot of our practice is to enable us to be with the present and our response to it as it's influenced by past dukkha. One important thing to remember is that whenever we're in the midst of negative, isolating feelings, we're suffering. And we intuitively seek to manipulate our environment in order to ease that pain, when most of what needs to be done to ease the pain is an inside job. For one thing, we just don't have the power to change the world, so we'll be happy with it. So, all except for the inside part of the job, you know, take Tylenol. Do the things that you can. Sometimes they're very limited. Take care of those. But when it comes to emotional pain, most of the time, it's to be taken care of internally. The healing power of this practice is to pay attention to all of our experience and to seek to understand both the current and the past causes and conditions of our mind states. So that's what this phrase that you may have heard frequently means, causes and conditions. It means something's happened, we respond to it, and that response lands in a mind that's full of unprocessed emotion. And the practice is to very patiently ferret it out, figure out what's what. I often refer to it as getting to know the landscape of our minds. And beginners are like, whoa, where am I? You know, you may remember that from your own experience. You duck down under the surface of your mind and you look around. It's like, this is not what I expected. I did not expect it to be so turbulent, so mysterious and confusing. Understanding both our current and our past causes and conditions for our mind states is a big job. And it does require daily work, which is also known as meditation. So let's say that something big happens to us, like having a loved one diagnosed with cancer, just to get a little personal here. For example, my wife, Carla. And that diagnosis comes after several weeks of escalating likelihood that's what it's going to be. But uncertainty. There's the phone call to repeat just a routine mammogram, and then ultrasound and a biopsy, and then a phone call with the initial results that we didn't really understand, but they sounded pretty ominous. And then a nice little weekend before we got to meet with the surgeon and find out what that meant. So, each step produced fear. That was a response to an immediate event. And you take fear and you add it to uncertainty, and you get a lot of worry. And worry is that self-generated dukkha I was talking about. It doesn't really do any good. I mean, what purpose does it serve other than self-torment? You know, I'm not completely sold on fear either, but it arises on its own. And, you know, it feels like worry arises on its own, but there'll be that repetitive thought loop, which is a clue to what's going on. This is just worry. These are just thoughts of what if. And they're not real. There's no reality in there. And the mind is trying to cancel out that uncertainty when it simply can't. The uncertainty is there. And maybe time will resolve it, but worrying won't. So the art here is to be present with that fear without crossing over into that thought habit of worry. And that's quite a tricky balancing act, as I'm sure you all know. I mean, how many times have you just said, okay, I'm not going to worry? So how to achieve that balance? Expand the mind into a vast space of open awareness. Maybe you can visualize the space in between the galaxies. But that open awareness, when you're really being mindful, and whatever comes in is just there. It arises, it's accepted, and it passes away. That's the kind of expansion that will help us balance our emotional responses. Now, also remember the Dharma, because the teachings have a lot of help for us in this process. Be aware of the teaching of impermanence, anicca. Everything changes. Nothing is permanent. And we don't know. We simply have to stay in this condition of not knowing a lot of things. And we are interdependent with all that is. My being depends on everything that brought it into being and sustains it now. And I'm part of what sustains the rest of the universe. We all are. And then finally, the teaching of the power of love, or metta. When we merge metta, both our feelings for others and theirs for us, with the awareness of these teachings, then equanimity arises. When we can have the support of metta and hold the understanding of impermanence, not knowing, and interdependence, then we have this wonderful sustaining balance. Even when we're undergoing tremendously powerful emotions. Because we awaken to this state of mind that can feel pain and be at peace. There are two wings to awakening: wisdom or discernment, and the divine abodes, metta, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And when these two wings are working together, we are free as birds. both when my sister died and when Carla waited for her diagnosis and then had surgery, I reached out and I asked for metta. And I felt it. Carla felt it. It was so comforting and such a powerful help in maintaining equanimity. At each step in the process I went through with both of those events, there was great pain, but knowing that I was surrounded by metta let me be with it fully and keep enough balance to see the causes and conditions that would otherwise have magnified it and stretch it out, which the Buddha, I love this analogy, he likened it to standing next to a raging fire and throwing logs on it. You know, it's bad enough. So did equanimity keep the pain away? No. Not in either case. Not in any case. The pain is there. But with the aid of all of my practice and your metta, I could keep that pain manageable. And for the most part, I remained equanimous. The equanimity was pretty wonderful to have. Now I want to offer a caution from Philip Moffat, who says it's important to distinguish between the fully present experience of pain while being equanimous from simply being calm or appearing calm. It's nice to be calm. It's pleasant. And fortunately, we have many opportunities in life to be calm, and we should open to them and enjoy them. But trying to force calm when we're upset isn't helpful, and it can become suppression or even delusion-inducing pretension, which will take us several steps backwards. More stuff in the back of the mind, more causes and conditions developing to contribute to future dukkha. So, equanimity does not remove us from our inner experience. It does quite the contrary. In Pali, it's often called Tatra Majjhatata. So, that's a compound Pali word made up of simple words that add up to remaining center in the midst of whatever is happening. So, you're in it. And you're balanced. You have the ability to see all of it, plus some reality surrounding it. Now, the dynamic of the practice that I've described is easier to see and follow when pain is involved, but it's also important with pleasure. These two natural responses to stimuli are innocent in their raw form, pain, pleasure, something in between. But when we steep them in unwholesome thinking, they grow into greed, hatred, and delusion. And those are the causes of suffering. Now, there are many practices in Eastern religions, including Buddhism, that cultivate equanimity while being fully present with pleasure. And I'm glad to report that when we do that, the pleasure is magnified without distortion. while it lasts, and then it passes away eventually. And the experience can be wonderfully healing and supportive of a happy mind. So even after it's passed away, and I'm thinking of the states of bliss that come with concentration, even after they've passed away, they support equanimity and happiness. So what do we need to do to have freedom in the midst of either pain or pleasure? And pleasure, by the way, can be very addictive. That turns into greed and craving. While we're in the midst of it, say we're fretting, we're kind of lost under the tsunami of it, how do we get free? If we have cultivated the mind state of equanimity, then we can tap into it. We can remember maybe the visualization of that vast open awareness, maybe the experience of the peace that it brings, but something that can just take us back a little bit, start pulling us out of it. And if not, if we haven't cultivated it, or we're just too lost in the emotion for it, then just try metta. Try to remember, I'm sending you metta. It's there. There are Buddhist practitioners at this very moment sending metta to all beings, and you're entitled to it. Or you can remember the serenity prayer. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Try to discern between pain as a response to the actual event and that caused by thoughts. In other words, do what you can. Pick any of these tools. Don't expect immediate and complete serenity. Every bit you do to reduce dukkha helps. And when you can, cultivate equanimity. When you're out of the tsunami and you've dried off, do your equanimity practice. The more we can be fully present with the truth of the moment, the freer we become, and the more free we can be in future moments. It's a positive spiral. We can cultivate equanimity in a number of ways. In daily meditation practice, we can do something like metta practice. I'll take you through it, actually, with a little guidance from Jack Kornfield. So you don't have to get in a special position, but sit and bring a soft attention to your breath until your body and your mind have calmed a little. Begin by reflecting on the benefit of a mind that has balance and equanimity. Sense what a gift it can be to bring a peaceful heart to the world around you. Let yourself feel an inner sense of balance and ease. Then begin repeating such phrases as, "May I be balanced and at peace." Recognize that all created things arise and pass away. Let yourself rest in the middle of this flow. May I learn to see the arising and passing of all nature with equanimity and balance. May I be open and balanced and peaceful. You don't need to use those exact phrases, but anytime you spend flexing the muscles of equanimity, you'll build them up. And you can also practice in daily life when difficult stuff happens. When you do it in your daily meditation, have tissues handy and just watch the thoughts that come up. You know, as you touch into the feelings of something difficult that's happened in your life recently, just watch the thoughts. Recognize whether they're representative of the event itself or the background, causes and conditions. And again, don't worry about getting it right. As your practice matures, you'll find yourself doing this just as you go through the day, as you encounter and deal with the 2,000 joys and 2,000 sorrows of life. Then you'll be able to sit like a mountain in the midst of whatever is happening. And as Sharon Salzberg says, then we feel everything without exception, and we relate to it through our own strength of awareness, not through habitual reactions. So sit like a mountain. Sit with a sense of strength and dignity. Be steadfast. Be majestic. Be natural and at ease in awareness. No matter how many winds are blowing, no matter how many clouds are swirling around you, no matter how many lions are prowling, be intimate with everything and sit like a mountain. Thank you.